What is going on, crypto family? So today we got Yellow Pole. He is the co-founder of Dusk Network. If you remember, like November of last year, 2018, we had Emmanuel Francione on. He was the other co-founder of Dusk Network. So we already got kind of a good idea of what Dusk is trying to do. And if you remember, Emmanuel, he still owes us his links to his Nerd Jazz songs. I guess he's got a band and he was supposed to send us the links, but he didn't. Anyways, in this interview with Yellow, we have a fun chat. We talk about, you know, him actually being a MasterChef contestant on TV. We talk about, of course, what they're doing at Dusk Network. And we also talk about how me getting drunk saved my life. So it's a pretty fun one. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right,
let's go check it out and I'll catch you on the other side.
What is going on, crypto family? So today we got Yellow Pool with us. He is the co-founder, right? The co-founder of Dusk Network. You know, last time we had Emmanuel on, I think that was like November of 2018. So it's cool to see the other side of the team here, man. How you doing?
Doing very well. Cheers for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on and to revisit, of course. You know, we can talk a little bit about everything that's happened since. And yeah, like you said, I'm a little bit more on the business side. Emmanuel is our tech lead, so. And we can potentially take a slightly different tack today.
Yeah, I'm still a little upset that you know, Manuel never sent me the Nerd Jazz link. You know, I guess he's got a band, you know, and he was supposed to send us a link to his music, and we were gonna, you know, post it for the community.
Oh wow! So he took you down the alternative jazz rabbit hole.
What about you, man? You got any hidden talents or skill sets? Are you maybe a lead singer to, you know, maybe, I don't know, Pantera or something like that?
Yeah, so I toured with Pantera for a few years back in the day, but it just can't find the time anymore. No, I am significantly into music. So I used to play guitar for a few years. I've done it in bands as well, and a little bit of piano, a little bit of singing, but it was usually mainly the guitar. Other than that, I'm a reasonable cook and reading, I guess. But the coolest talent, I suppose, is music.
Right on, man. What kind of music? It's not Nerd Jazz? Is this like maybe dubstep or electronica or something, you know?
Nah, they're quite hard genres to pull off on the guitar. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it was never my style. It was very kind of bluesy, rocky, folk music, kind of, you know, the Dylan vein, you know, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. So, and then obviously, I guess you're a cook too, right? So does Gordon Ramsay have anything to fear?
Maybe only from a cursing point of view when it's a busy day, but I don't think from a culinary achievement point of view, where we sold our soul to blockchain instead of entrees.
Gotcha. So selling your soul to blockchain, how'd that happen? What's kind of your background? What got you into tech?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I'm a business guy by nature, right? But I always veered towards the tech side of business, kind of the traditional fully commercial side, and never really meshed quite well with also, you know, the desire to be on exciting forefronts. So I completed a master's in business here in the Netherlands, and then worked for a few startups, one of which recently got acquired by Siemens, and then moved to work for the energy company Shell, where I started in the innovation team, so into a much more technical role, and there was part of the Three Musketeers really that founded the Shell blockchain team. So I really started in blockchain from the enterprise side, you know, working
with that like? What was that like working for Shell, doing, you know, blockchain projects with them?
It was quite Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually.
they got deep pockets, and they got, you know, a lot of brain power. So, you know, what happened there? Why'd you leave?
So we started with initially, like any kind of, you know, innovation starts in these big type of businesses where it's a few adventurers, if you will, that are, you know, scrounging around for a little bit of budget. And this was, 2016. It wasn't really that hot yet on the consumer side. It was kind of on the tail end of this few-year bear markets since 2013, 2014, or sideways market, I guess. So it wasn't that hot of a topic yet. So it was quite tricky to get some budget for that first project approved. And then we started to have our early successes, delivering some proof of concepts, some experiments. And then kind of early 2017, you know, things started ramping up in the consumer space again. You know, Ethereum started to becoming huge. Hyperledger was making moves. Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, that kind of stuff was popping up. So it became much easier to leverage these, you know, these early wins into kind of a full-fledged project. And that over time led to a standalone blockchain team, which has, you know, done investments now in blockchain companies. They've got solutions in production. It's a serious department now, but it was, you know, three mavericks in a small project room only a few years ago, working together with startups, trying to find out, you know, what this blockchain thing was all about, up until, you know, joining Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, working with Consensus, these kind of things. Then after a few years, I kind of completed my stint on the innovation side, if you will. And as it's typical for these big companies, you kind of have to, you know, move roles every few years or so. And there was one other area that I was really excited about, which was the renewable energies area. So I've always kind of been on that side of energy, and not really on the oil and gas side, but more on the, you know, solar wind side of things. And then I was involved for about half a year in the deployment of a large tech system for a wind farm, offshore wind. You know, this whole ramp up was happening in the crypto and blockchain space, and every free second that I wasn't spending on wind energy, I find myself, you know, keeping abreast of all the updates in the space that I, you know, just spent all my time on for the years prior. And I just found myself, you know, being bitten by the bug and not being able to let go. So then decision time kind of arrived, and I decided to leave Shell to pursue a blockchain full time on my own terms, which started with a bit of consultancy and quite quickly spiraled into a venture that is now a Dusk Network.
So how did you and Emmanuel come together?
So we started our early days as consultants, and we ended up working for the same client. And found out that we enjoyed each other's company much more than we enjoyed the client's company. And, you know, we had a bit more ideology behind it, you know, the open source tech, the whole decentralization vision, especially in the early days of blockchain. And now it's much better, but there were plenty of companies kind of trying to corrupt that, right? So it's like, yeah, no, we're doing a blockchain, but what about IP? Like, no, dude, it's open source. You know, there's no, if you want people to use it, you need to show them that you're playing a fair game, right? That everything checks out on the back end. So there were all these kind of things going on where we saw, like, okay, well, we can do this the way we think it should be done, and you know, not work for someone else. So we set off together with him on the tech side and me on the business side.
Awesome. So you guys kind of went from, I guess, energy to consultancy to creating Dusk, right? And so for people.
Yeah, Emmanuel had already been an entrepreneur for a few years. So he'd already built various tech systems, also in the, you know, consensus mechanisms, those kind of things. But I was a little late to the party.
Yeah, if I remember right, he was like one of the coders for the GPS system, right? Within Tommy or
Tom,
I forget. Tom, there you go.
Yeah, big GPS system. He's done things like airline air traffic control systems, right? Quite significant tech deployments. And he'd worked, he'd already exited a few startups in the years since. So he's got a few extra years under the belt. But on a good day, I keep up.
That's awesome, man. So dude can, you know, rock out with his nerd jazz. Code all kinds of crazy stuff, and then you guys created Dusk. And so for people that want to, you know, revisit the November of last year video, they can, you know, kind of get the deep dive to Dusk. But if you can kind of sum it up into a nutshell, can you just talk a little bit about the network, what Dusk is doing, and then kind of some of the, I guess, advancements that you've had since November of last year to where you're at today?
Yeah, definitely. So Dusk Network is effectively, if you really want to simplify it, is a privacy chain with smart contract functionality, right? And there were various reasons why we wanted to build this, and mainly we saw the whole space in blockchain and outside of blockchain. There was this outcry for increased privacy, but it was quite difficult to reconcile this with different compliance requirements, transparency requirements. And there we found that things like zero knowledge cryptography, where you can prove that you adhere to all kinds of requirements without having to disclose personal information, these kind of things could be a very big boon to the space. And that's where it started in a nutshell. So we devised the Dust Network as a privacy chain, but with a lot of added functionality on top. And there we've really been pushing the boundaries of things like zero knowledge cryptography. And we've also built our own consensus mechanism because we wanted to move away from the wastefulness of proof of work systems. Also because regulators tend to not really appreciate it, and build our own smart contract functionality that uses these zero knowledge proofs. So yeah, privacy chain with smart contracts.
Awesome. I'm just going to circle right back around. So privacy chain with smart contracts. I love it, man. So what's happened from November of last year to where we're at today? And you have some updates coming for people?
Yeah, no, for sure. So in November, we were still closing our initial funding round, which we managed to time with the absolute worst of the bear market.
How is that going for you, right? I mean, it's kind of a bloodbath out there for anybody with an ICO, TG, IEO, you name it, any three-letter acronym out there right now. It's rough, right? Because everybody's, they're not sure what's going on with the market. They see Bitcoin go up, they're excited. They see it go down, they start crying. They don't know what's going on, right? They hear Facebook's coming in, all the big institutions are coming in, they're excited again. But it doesn't seem like people are really putting a lot of money into three-letter acronyms right now, the TGEs, ICOs, IEOs. How's that been for you? How's
it going? So back then, this was right before we started this kind of last IEO wave, right? So we did a token sale, for example, on the ETHFINEX platform, which is arguably the first IEO of recent times without the moniker yet. But it was the depths of the bear market. So we had to really up our game, so to say, to get investors to trust in you effectively. So it took a little bit longer than we originally wanted to, but it does force you to get good quickly. It's not just a white paper with a pitch and you open a smart contract and here's your 20 million, right? It was significant time investments and a significant effort, and you really need to show these investors why you're different. And of course, it took a lot of energy at the time, but it also gives you a certain trial by fire mentality, where after you do pull it off, you feel quite battle born, if you will, ready to take on the next challenge. And that's really the attitude that we've had since, and it's been going quite well. So we're well funded now, we're ready for the next years, and market's moving up a little bit, which is good because we're approaching liquidity for the token. Funding the protocol development is in great shape. So I have to say that obviously it's been a tough market, but we've been reasonably blessed by still getting our chance.
Gotcha. And you said liquidity for the token, so I assume that means the token will be out there in the wild for people to start trading and things. Is that for the world, or for just certain parts of the world, different countries? Who's been open to the sale?
Yeah, so I don't know the exact restricted list by heart, but tough jurisdictions like USA and Canada had to be excluded from the private offering. There's a few others on the list. It's on the website. But yeah, those are the people that we were able to offer it to under the legal frameworks that are out there right now, and so those are the people that will also be able to hold and trade the token going forward as we deliver on our testnet. It's always been our ambition to start bringing some liquidity and exposure to the token, and that the ambition still stands.
Cool. So, as far as, we covered, the token, closing up the sale. What about tech? What tech has been dropped since November of last year to today?
Oh, well, publicly facing effectively everything. So we were in quite a private dev mode for a while, deep research and development. And now we've really started to open it up. So we've opened up a separate Discord for, developer community. We've been slowly releasing code. So the a lot of the zero knowledge privacy modules have been released. Last week, we released a browser node. So for the Chrome and Brave browsers, people can run a very lightweight version of our node, contribute to the network, basically take some of the workload away from full nodes that are running the consensus and earn a little bit of dusk in the browser, you know, those kind of things. And I believe on the 7th of July, I was always taught to not timestamp videos, but there we go. On the 7th of July, we should be releasing the full testnet. So that means all of the code is public, you know, node, consensus, transactions. It's all there for the world to see and start playing with all kinds of kind of, you know, picks and shovels around it. So monitoring system, the browser node that I just mentioned, and also all kinds of documentation. So we've always had a relatively academic angle. So we're always releasing new papers, new specifications, new documentation, because that's really the crowd that we interact with, right? The other privacy projects, the universities, zero knowledge cryptography or privacy chains are, you know, have a deep mathematical element. So yeah, these are, this is also part of the language that we have to speak in order to be on the forefront.
Yeah. Light reading, you know, piece of cake, right?
Well, it does put you to sleep.
That's exciting, yeah. Man. Speaking about reading, you know, what's maybe a book that you read growing up, or maybe even recently, that's kind of, you know, been important to you that you think other people should, you know, read as well?
Ooh, fiction or nonfiction?
Be either, man. Something that's important to you. I've had so many people say different things over the years, from Dr. Seuss to you name it.
Dr. Seuss is not a bad pick, actually.
Yeah,
it's a great question. Oh, a little bit of a curveball still.
No, I've been asking for years. If you watch any of my videos, you know, this is just it's one of the ones I ask.
Yeah, no, and as you ask it, it popped back into memory. But so over the last few years, I read a few, some of the few nonfiction books I read that I really liked were either a combination of, you know, business related books, these basic principles around investing that are like 60 years old, still hold true today. But also bestsellers like Sapiens, for example. I'm sure you're aware of that book, which I thought did a very exquisite job of bringing the kind of whole meta game of our planet together, if you will, which I thought was very, very, very intriguing to read. On the fiction side, I'm a huge fantasy nerd. So I read all the, you know, all the these big book series that, you know, are 15,000 pages, keep you busy for half the year, that kind of stuff. So I'm really into the fantasy.
Wow, 15,000 pages.
I'm reading a series now, which is called the Madison Empire by Stephen Erickson, and it was the series that I started, I think, 5 years ago. And back then I just couldn't get through it. It's a very complex series, and I just had to put it down, like, I don't know, 30% into the first book. I just couldn't do it. And I've probably read a few hundred books since, and I thought I'd pick it up again at the start of this year. I guess I leveled up my fantasy reading skills a bit, because I was doing all right now, and now I'm approaching the last two books. So that's 10 books that have probably kept me busy for, you know, the last 9 months or so.
No, that's awesome, man. That's, you know, definitely does something for the left brain, right? You know, keeping you.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's something vastly different than my daily reality, but it's still, you know, the ultimate common denominators are, you know, the interactions between characters, that kind of stuff. So it's always relatable, even though it's a little bit nerdy.
All good. And then what about movies, man? What's your favorite movie?
I don't watch that many movies. I watched Alita a few weeks ago, kind of sci-fi movie, which I thought was pretty good. But favorite, I like the old kind of British kind of cult films, you know, or even American cult films, stuff like Trainspotting, Boondock Saints, these stuff.
There you go. Yeah,
that's the good stuff.
Awesome, man. What's maybe something people don't know about you that you can share with us that's not going to land you in prison, you know?
Well, you've already been through my, like, the deepest, darkest secrets of my nerdy hobbies.
And not so much. You just said you played some instruments, right? So maybe you get some other kind of other skill other than, you know, reading fantasy books and playing guitar.
Oh, wow. Something people don't know about me.
Said you're also a cook. Gordon Ramsay has to look out.
I did. One of my lesser known secrets is that I was once on the Dutch version of MasterChef, but I didn't make it very far.
What happened?
I didn't have a sob story, man. No, it was, I was very curious from a competition point of view. And then I found out where the reality of making a fun TV show meets the actual culinary skill involved. And they basically send you like these 15-page questionnaires about if you've got any bad family relationships, any bad breakups, if your aunt is sick, that kind of stuff, right? Because they're looking for the, you know, these little 30-second clips in between the cooking to, you know, make you a cool sob story that people relate to and tune in for. And I was probably early 20s back then, and I just wasn't feeling that level of exposure. I was just there to have some fun with the cooking and not to, you know, cry my heart out on national television with some fabricated bullshit. So I basically was like, no, I'll fill them in somewhat, but if this is the price I have to pay, it's not worth it, man. So that was a one episode adventure for me.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, they definitely need the drama for these TV sitcoms and things like that, these reality shows. It's either they need drama, you know, like, you know, inner turmoil or something like that, or they need somebody that's just like a complete tyrant to the other people, you know, kind of like the Ramsay of sorts, you know?
So. Yeah, man, that's it's a tough character to play. I was just there for, you know, the fun of it. Yeah, to cook and to have a little bit of a look behind the scenes as well. So I'm really happy that I found out how bad it really was, but I'm also quite happy that I halted it there, you know, but it was very fun to see how little of the show is cooking related.
Awesome, man. Now you're cooking with blockchain. I love it. So what's maybe one of the craziest things you've done, you know, growing up or even now? Maybe you're a skydiver, maybe you've I don't know, swam with sharks. You got any kind of crazy stories for us? You just told us that you're on MasterChef, which is pretty awesome, but
yeah, that's a start, right?
Yeah.
That's a good question. No skydiving. The extreme sports aren't that bad. So I've done some diving, you know, that kind of stuff. But I was never much one for being dropped out of planes.
There's something wrong about that, right? You're jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. So I don't know.
I do think that it is a moment where you get to find out what kind of person you are. Because, you know, you just got tossed out of a plane, and are you going to basically Viking scream your way down, or are you going to burst out crying? Like, this will tell you.
Yeah, or you'll find out. It might be your head's the last thing that goes through your mind as you hit the pavement, too, if the chute don't open. So,
yeah, that's probably the part of it that doesn't draw me to the adventure.
You know, it's well, on topic. Years ago, I was in Hawaii, and I was going to take my niece and one of my nephews skydiving. But it was happy hour. It was happy hour there at the resort. And I got drunk. I got drunk, and we didn't go skydiving. But the place that we were going to go, the place that we had set up the appointment, we set up our appointment to go skydiving with them, they all died. I'm not even kidding. They died that day. We didn't go. We stayed at the hotel, got drunk. We canceled our appointment. The person that, you know, they basically, I forget what they call it, but you basically skydive with somebody else.
Yeah, instructor, tandem, whatever.
Yeah, tandem, there you go. So everybody that went tandem, there was like two people, and they all died. So the two different tandem instructors and the people with them died. So I was like, well, you know what? No skydiving for me. That was a sign from God.
And then people say drinking isn't good for you, huh?
Saved my life.
No, it's always the planes, man. I had one flight from Tokyo to Taipei a few years ago, and that was probably the one that ever since put me off of flying a little. I have to do it a lot for work, so you kind of get through it, but we had like full pull oxygen mask coming down, and this plane was, losing altitude at a way too rapid pace. Like all the lights in the cabin were off, masks were down, plane was just bumping and dropping a few hundred feet every second, people crying, screaming, and it's just like, this is it is the most it's such a shit feeling, because there's nothing you can do, right? There's not like you're steering the thing, or like any action that you can take has any impact. You're just there, you know, in the hands, putting your fate in the hands of the weather and some guy that you hope had a good night's sleep, right? And when the mask came down, that was not a great moment. And ever since we every time we had a bit of turbulence, we, you know, it's always the saying, out of the day, turbulence till the mask come down.
Every time you start hitting the turbulence, your butt starts to pucker. You're like, oh no, is this it?
It's just not good. Once you've had that flight, that really, really bad flight, it does change the game for you.
Yeah, and it's funny, the, you know, before you land or whatnot, they always tell you to, you know, put your head, you know, in your hands and lean forward. And the first thing that happens is when you crash, you get your neck broken. So
it's and the reason I talked to a guy actually that explained to me why that was, and it's not necessarily for whiplash or those kind of things, but it's because the kitchen in the back, none of it is wall mounted, right? So they've got all these carts and stuff, and if you hit something really, really hard, then basically 20 of these metal carts come sailing over the chairs. So it's basically not get your face skewered on a metal tray rather than prevent a broken bone or anything.
So this is to avoid decapitation, but it's going to probably inflict a broken neck if you land hard enough. So
yeah, well, you have to pick your poison, right?
Well, yeah, we'll end it right there. So, guys, that's awesome, man. Well, it's been great getting to know you, though, man. And you know, I look forward to all the cool stuff that Dusk is going to keep, you know, dropping on us. And we'll definitely make sure we get the links posted out there. And July 7th is, you know, an exciting day for you. So we've time stamped it now a couple times. So, you know,
tell us the pressure on.
Yeah. So tell Emmanuel I said hi. We'll get the links out for you. And unless there's anything else, man, I'll let you get on with your day.
No, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having us again. And, you know, these things are always a little bit, you know, different, casual, good fun. So yeah. It was a pleasure to be on. And, thanks for, spreading the love. And I'd love to be back again sometime.
You got it, brother. All right, well, take care. God bless. And we'll talk to you soon. Hey, welcome back, everybody. So we got a little dark in that one, but it was kind of fun. We talked about our fear of flying. We talked about how, you know, getting drunk saved my life, right? Because, you know, had they not had all that free booze there in Hawaii, I guess me and my niece probably would have gone splat. So thank you for booze, right? Thank you, God. Anyways, it was a great time talking with Yellow. Hopefully you enjoyed it. You know, for people who want to check out Dusk Network, make sure you check out their links. And make sure you guys go, you know, read some 15,000-page book, right? And go check out the Boondock Saints and all the other cool stuff that we talked about. It's a good time. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. So God bless you. Love you. Catch you on the next one.